Well, good morning and welcome to Overeaters Anonymous, a vision for you big book study. My name is Jen A. I reside here in Colorado and I am a recovered compulsive overeater. Thank you, God. Today is Tuesday, March 5th, 2024. It's 7 a.m. Eastern Standard Time and today we're reading from the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous in the chapter titled Bill's Story. We're currently on page 7. We're going to be reading paragraph number 3. It begins with, but it was not, and it ends with, the undertaker or the asylum. We're just going to read that one paragraph, comment on that one paragraph, and here are today's readers for Team Tuesday. For 12 Steps, we have Chris G., 12 Traditions, Susan G. Our reader of the text will be Nancy P., closing reader is Lynn S. Elena C., thanks for being our backup, and our newcomer greeter will be Vanita L. with our second hour moderator as Eileen M. The reference numbers for yesterday, Monday, March 4th, 2024, are the following. For the 7 a.m. Eastern Standard Big Book Study recording, it's 21,190. That's 21190. And for the 10 a.m. Eastern Standard Big Book Study recording, it's 21,191. 21191. Well, here's the OA preamble. Overeaters Anonymous is a fellowship of individuals who, through shared experience, strength, and hope, are recovering from compulsive overeating. We welcome everyone who wants to stop eating compulsively. There are no dues or fees for members. We are self-supporting through our own contributions, neither soliciting nor accepting outside donations. OA is not affiliated with any public or private organization, political movement, ideology, or religious doctrine, and we do take no position on outside issues. Our primary purpose is to abstain from compulsive eating and compulsive food behaviors and to carry the message of recovery through the 12 steps of OA to those who still suffer. Here's our sole purpose. OA's fifth tradition states that each group has but one primary purpose, to carry its message to the compulsive overeater who still suffers. And out of Vision for You Big Book Study, our message is that people who suffer from compulsive overeating can recover through abstinence and the practice of the 12 steps and 12 traditions of Overeaters Anonymous. I will now ask Chris G. to read the 12 steps.
Thank you. Okay, so the 12 steps, these are the steps we took. Step number one, we admitted we were powerless over food, that our lives had become unmanageable. Two, came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. Three, made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God as we understood Him. Four, made a searching and fearless moral inventory of ourselves. Five, admitted to God, to ourselves, and to another human being the exact nature of our wrongs. Six, we're entirely ready to have God remove all these defects of character. Seven, humbly asked Him to remove our shortcomings. Eight, made a list of all persons we had harmed and became willing to make amends to them all. Nine, made direct amends to such people wherever possible, except when to do so would injure them or others. Ten, continued to take personal inventory, and when we were wrong, promptly admitted it. 11, sought through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God as we understood Him, praying only for knowledge of His will for us and the power to carry that out. 12, having had a spiritual awakening as a result of these steps, we tried to carry this message to compulsive overeaters and to practice these principles in all our affairs. Thank you.
I will now ask Susan G. to read the 12 traditions.
Good morning. Susan G., recovered compulsive overeater in Tennessee. The 12 traditions of Overeaters Anonymous are, 1, our common welfare should come first. Personal recovery depends upon OA unity. 2, for our group purpose, there is but one ultimate authority, a loving God as He may express Himself in our group conscience. Our leaders are but trusted servants. They do not govern. 3, the only requirement for OA membership is a desire to stop eating compulsively. 4, Each group should be autonomous except in matters affecting other groups or OA as a whole. 5, each group has but one primary purpose, to carry its message to the compulsive overeater who still suffers. 6, an OA group ought never endorse, finance, or lend the OA name to any related facility or outside enterprise, lest problems of money, property, and prestige divert us from our primary purpose. 7, every OA group ought to be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. 8, Overeaters Anonymous should remain forever non-professional, but our service centers may employ special workers. 9, OA as such ought never be organized, but we may create service boards or committees directly responsible to those they serve. 10, Overeaters Anonymous has no opinion on outside issues. Hence, the OA name ought never be drawn into public controversy. 11, our public relations policy is based on attraction rather than promotion. We need always maintain personal anonymity at the level of press, radio, films, television, and other public media of communication. 12, anonymity is the spiritual foundation of all these traditions, ever reminding us to place principles before personalities. Thank you. Service, and I pass.
Thank you, Chris G. and Susan G. for your service this morning. This is how our meeting works. Our meeting focuses on the directions for recovery described in the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous. We read a paragraph or two from the literature, then stop and share on what was read. Anyone can share, but we ask that you keep your sharing to the topic and literature we are discussing, and that you keep your share to approximately 3 minutes. Singleness of purpose reminds us to identify as compulsive overeaters only. Our abstinence requirement for moderators is 1 year, for readers is 6 months, but there is no abstinence requirement if you'd like to share on the topic. This meeting does request that your sharing be directly linked to what was read. We are sharing what the directions in the Big Book mean to us. To share, you're going to press star 1 to unmute your phone. Then once you're done sharing, let us know by saying pass, and then press star 1 to mute your phone. In order to have a quiet meeting, everyone's phone except the speaker should be muted. So today, we're going to resume our study in the chapter titled Bill's Story. We're in the Big Book on page number 7. We're reading that third paragraph and commenting on that third paragraph only. I'd like to ask Nancy P. to begin reading.
Oh, am I up?
Go for it.
Okay, sorry. I was unmuting. Nancy P., recovered in West Newton, Massachusetts. But it was not, for the frightful day came when I drank once more. The curve of my declining moral and bodily health fell off like a ski jump. After a time, I returned to the hospital. This was the finish, the curtain, it seemed to me. My weary and despairing wife was informed that it would all end in heart failure during delirium tremens, or I would develop a wet brain perhaps within a year. She would soon have to give me over to the undertaker or the asylum. Okay, you'll time me, Jen. So time doesn't work, we learn. Self-knowledge doesn't work, we learn. And fear doesn't work. And for me, desperation doesn't even work, never worked. I mean, I was desperate to eat and be thin. That's what my desperation was. Like, I was sort of, you know, in that space. And no matter how great the necessity or the wish, right? To stop, or especially to stay stopped, nothing worked. And on the rare occasions, if I stopped at all, which was mostly if I could make it from one meal to the next, I felt like that was stopping. I think that I had the problem licked and would start eating again at the very second I decided I had the problem licked. And if I would stop for a couple of days or weeks or rarely a couple of months, was worse because I wanted to turn myself inside out, climb the walls, and then cut off my feet. I lived in shame and terror and remorse, horror, and hopelessness, and especially fear. And they all came up and shredded me. And you know, there was no escape from it. And I tried, you know, all these things. I mean, I didn't rush from the city to the country to play golf or anything. But, you know, it says in the doctor's opinion, here are some of the methods we tried, and then it lists them. And I did a lot of those things, you know, for compulsive overeaters. You know, I eat that, don't eat this, don't eat that, et cetera. And, you know, I tried to do everything that all the people you know, try to do, lower my standards before I reach there so that I would not feel like I was a failure. But this elevator only goes down. I mean, I stopped eating. I stopped and recovered when my daughter was self-harming. But I had plenty of awful catastrophes happen to me before that. My mother had a stroke in the middle of the night and was paralyzed and pretty much brain damaged for the next 10 years until she died. I got in a car accident every weekend for 2 months when I was in high school, and I totaled each of my parents' cars twice. And they finally said, "We can't afford to have you drive." And I was afraid and ashamed and afraid and ashamed. And when my poor girl was hacking herself up and you know, I was sobbing over her arms, putting bacitracin ointment on them, that was powerlessness to me. And I still couldn't stop. In fact, it got worse. And finally, I just couldn't do it anymore. The courage to do battle was not there. And I called my dear, dear friend who I've known for 45 years, she's the one that I call when, you know, when I got a pregnancy test back that my son might have had a non-life compatible condition. She's who I called, and she talked me in off the ledge, and she was the one that told me to call this meeting. And I dug my heels in with spikes so that I wouldn't move, and I said, I said to myself, "I'm not doing it," but I did it, and I have not had to hurt myself with food since the first day I dialed in. And I can tell you, it wasn't because of the meeting. It was because when I dialed into this meeting, I stopped everything. I stopped crying. I stopped thinking. I stopped arguing. I stopped eating, and I stopped thinking. I was trembling and broken, but I did whatever I was told, and I have not had to hurt myself with food. Thank you, Jen. And that is for everybody. Everybody gets what I have. Everybody gets more than what I have. There's plenty for everyone. There's only one thing you need to do. Say it with me. Surrender, surrender, surrender. And that's what that's all passed. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Nancy P. from Boston, for getting us started this morning. We do value everyone's experiences on the line this morning, so we do ask that you limit your share to every Thursday in order that others might share their experience too. I'm going to take a list of names. If you'll give me your first name, the first initial of your last name, one at a time, that would be great. Who would like to share on what was read today?
Mary B.
Janet B.
Harlan G.
Mary B, Janet B, Harlan G,
Lindsay P.
I'm sorry, could you say that one more time?
Sure, Lindsay P.
Lindsay P, could you spell the first name? I'm sorry, it's kind of muffled.
No, that's okay. Lindsay, L-I-N-D-S-A-Y.
Thank you, Lindsay. Oh, I appreciate you. I was like, I know it's not. You're cute.
Michael. Okay.
Mike, gotcha.
Michael,
who else? There's one more spot. Mary B, Janet B, Harlan G, Lindsay P, Mike L, who else?
Marie T, Boston.
Marie T, all right. All right, well, let's start with this lineup. If everybody will make sure you're muted by pressing star one, we'll start with Mary B, followed by Janet B. Go right ahead, Mary.
Oh, good afternoon. My name's Mary. I'm recovered compulsive eater in the UK. Can everybody hear me? Can I be heard?
Yeah, just talk straight into your microphone.
Yes, perfect.
Please. Thank you.
Yeah, no, I didn't know whether I'd star one, so thank you. Do you know what? I don't think I've ever been more grateful to work with newcomers as I am at this point in my program, because it is just at this point, because I've been through this section recently with a couple of different sponsees, and actually one in AA as well. Excuse me. And the bit in the paragraph that precedes, you know, the self-knowledge and then the continuation of how that, the continuing explanation of how that just will not work it takes me to that place of belief, because I have the conclusion here that I'm powerless. You know, I have my own experience around, you know, swearing off, trying different food plans, trying different ways of doing things, all the control methods, human aid control methods that I tried that just did not work. And I thought I know about myself. I can mitigate any damage because I know what causes my problem. I have no idea. You know, I have no idea. And that was even after recovering as an alcoholic in AA. I had no idea what caused my compulsive eating. And yes, this paragraph is kind of a bit doom and gloom, but it gives me a starting point for a belief, because there is clearly a lack of power here. You know, despite all of that self-knowledge, there was a return to a hospital, there was a decline, there was a clear lack of power in the face of self-knowledge. And what option does that set me up for but to believe in something else? You know, and step one is an admission and step two is a belief for me. It's a belief that what worked for other people could work for me. And I tried many, many ways to stay abstinent in a way, physically abstinent. And the only method or way that I have found has been through complete surrender. Surrender to the physical allergy, and, you know, surrendering to the fact that I have a physical allergy and a mental obsession. And I thought for many years that I could fix myself through intuitive eating, that once I had the mental obsession down. No, because the mental obsession is just the part that sends me back to doing what I can't do. And the physical side of my disease, it manifests in some dishonesty. You know, physically, my mental obsession will cause me to lie about what physically I just cannot do. I cannot be a normal eater. So, yeah, I'm grateful for this paragraph setting me up nicely for step two. Thank you.
Perfect timing. Thank you, Mary B. from the UK. Up next, we have Janet B., followed by Harlan G. Morning, Janet.
Hi, good morning, Jen. Good morning, everyone. This is Janet B., a recovered compulsive eater in North Carolina. So I don't think I ever really honed in on that line before. The curve of my declining moral and bodily health fell off like a ski jump. So my first 6.5 years in Overeaters Anonymous, I didn't get one bit better. In fact, I got worse. And unfortunately, most of the people around me were trying to help me by addressing my bodily health, by giving me a food plan, a good, healthy food plan. I had lots of good, healthy food plans. I called them in, I weighed and measured them, but I couldn't stick to them. Why? Because I never addressed my declining, already in the tubes, moral health, which was horrendous. For 6.5 years, nobody ever told me that if I wanted to get anywhere at all, I had to become rigorously honest, because God won't coexist with dishonesty. And nobody ever told me that the way to improve my moral health was to realize that there was a God, that he loved me dearly, and that he had my back and he would help me. And only when I realized this and surrendered my life to him, not just my food plan, but like everything, right? Our book says God is everything or else he is nothing. Then I had the courage to clean up the wreckage of my past, make some really hard amends, and then go on to help others. So I have found for myself and for other people that just addressing the physical doesn't work, right? Our book says once the spiritual malady is overcome, we straighten out mentally and physically. So I am just like passionate about like the fact that if we want to get anywhere, we have to be honest. We have to do self-sacrifice, meaning giving up something I want in order to help other people. And we have to realize that there is a God and he does love us. And that when we surrender to him, we get the promises of page 100. The things that come to us when we put ourselves in God's hands are better than anything we could have planned. And that's all I got. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Janet B. from North Carolina, Harlan G. from Arizona, Europe, followed by Lindsay P. Go right ahead, Harlan.
Thank you very much, Jen. I'm Harlan G., and I'm a recovered compulsive overeater. I live in Scottsdale, Arizona. This is April of 1934. It is 1 year since Bill Wilson was hospitalized for the first time. We see the progression of Bill's disease. As much as we think it cannot possibly get any worse, there it is, getting worse. Do I think like Bill thinks? You bet I do. Do I eat like Bill drinks? You bet I do. nature of his disease is once again illustrated here in the absolute decline of his mental and physical health. The curve of my declining moral and bodily health fell off like a ski jump. He goes back to the hospital, and he says, my weary and despairing wife was informed that it would all end with heart failure during delirium tremens, or I would develop a wet brain. A wet brain is really a dry brain. When alcohol dehydrates the cells of a body, these guys feel like they swallowed a sandbox. The brain and liver do not regenerate themselves, and after a while, the brain, he just becomes a vegetable, and he has to be institutionalized with not him personally, Bill, but a person with wet brain has to be institutionalized for the rest of their life. Dr. Silkworth is looking at Bill Wilson and is, in his opinion, Silkworth's opinion, Bill is an alcoholic. Now, you have to remember that Towns Hospital was not an AA facility where they said, well, it's up to you to decide whether you're an alcoholic or not. Silkworth is looking at a man who came in a year ago in deplorable shape, and he's back again in worse shape. And to Silkworth, this spells alcoholism. And what is going to happen between this paragraph and the bottom of page 8 is not a miracle of God. It is the culmination of hundreds of miracles of God. Unlikely people doing unlikely things at unlikely times that will bring together the Alcoholics Anonymous movement that we have grown from, so that hundreds and hundreds of millions of people who are not even born yet will be able to avail themselves of this recovery program. God is going to use these people. God is going to set forth movement that is going to change the world forever. Could this have been done by men? No. No. This is not a miracle. It is not the miracle. It is hundreds of miracles so that I can stay alive today. I, who weighed 700 pounds, I, who was 335 pounds as a senior in high school, 500 pounds as a sophomore in college, 600 pounds as a college graduate, who has been pronounced that I'm going to die by doctors for as long as I can possibly remember. I'm very much alive, and I have a life that is worth living. I have a life that is worth living because of this program and because there is a God, and I'm not it. I am able to abstain from food and do so happily. And with that, I will pass. Thanks, Jen, for your service.
You're welcome, Harlan. Thanks for your pitch this morning. Up next, we have Lindsay P., followed by Mike L. Go right ahead, Lindsay. Where are you calling from today?
Good morning, everyone. Lindsay P. from New York. this paragraph resonates so much with me. When he shares that frightful day came again, it just gives me this image of like a terrifying encounter with an animal of just like this terror. Like he knew that one day he was going to be in the cage with that animal again. And that's how I felt every day in this disease, that I knew without a doubt, as much as I wanted to deny it, I knew without a doubt that the day would come where the addiction would rage its ugly head and I would be back in the battlefield with it. And on top of it, when I was in the addiction, even if the food was down, I was miserable and I was still fighting the bear. It just got stronger and stronger until I couldn't fight it anymore. And what I really hear in this paragraph is Bill's hopelessness. And I had that exact same hopelessness of just feeling so inadequate. Like the fact that I couldn't control it. I was not in control when I would pick up again. And I was miserable until I picked up again. And then more miserable once I picked up. And then only to pick up again to try and combat that misery. And that I'm just such a number on one's self-worth, that I would wake up in the morning with a promise and go to bed knowing I would break that promise to myself. And how dishonest is that to my own self? No wonder I couldn't be honest to anyone else. So I finally, to any newcomer out there that's in this, I was in this too, just a few months ago. And with God's power, I don't need willpower anymore. And thank God for that. As long as I keep working this program, which I do religiously day in and day out, that desire is gone and that fightfulness is gone. And I'm not even in the cage anymore at that animal. So that is just a miracle in itself. It took 40 years to get here, and I'm just going to work this every single day for one day at a time. And with that, I'll pass.
Thank you, Lindsay P. from New York, for your share today. Up next, we have Mike L. Mike, where are you calling from?
Hi, this is Mike L. from Aurora, Colorado. This is my first time sharing in this meeting, and I was told to do so by the moderator today. For me, this really hits home. The ups and downs of my weight, the ups and downs of my life, as far back as I can remember, were never devastating enough for me. About 33, 34 years ago, I ended up being hospitalized in a mental health institution because of this disease. I started eating again when I was in the middle of trying to become sober on my own, and became suicidal. And that still wasn't enough. It took another 18 years before I entered these rooms. And I thought I knew everything. I thought I was in control. I was large and in charge, and it was me. And I was so self-centered, and everything I wanted now. And my disease just kept going and going and going. And you know, my weariness and final despair was out of shame of what was going on when I started again into the food and started to gain weight after I lost about 120 pounds. And that was the bottom for me. And that surrender is one of many that I've had over the last years. God keeps bringing me things. You know, when I came in, I was going to be abstinent, but I chose my eating plan, and that worked. I've been abstinent since the day I came to these rooms, but I certainly was still a dry drunk. I still was an asshole. And then I had one surrender after another. I refused to weigh and measure. So now I weigh and measure. I said that I wasn't going to get up at 4 o'clock in the morning so I could pray and meditate before I came to this meeting. In the last 2 days, I've gotten up at 4 o'clock in the morning. I said I wasn't going to call my food in. And now I'm a member of Sober Eating Group out of LA. And I call my food. I take pictures and text my food in every day. And what happens is God gives me what I need to grow in relationship with him or her all the time. And this program is every morning when I wake up, it's a new program, and I have to recommit myself to it. And I am so grateful for the examples I've seen around me, for what God has given me. But that weariness, that despairing feeling that the wife had, that's what I had before I finally had the ability to let God into my life and surrender. And, you know, it is not my strength. It is my weakness that keeps me sober. With that, I'll pass.
Thanks, Mike L. from Colorado. All right, up next we have Marie T. from Boston. Marie, before you get on and share, if you'll give me a minute to just let others know who might have joined us, where we're at. So we're in Bill's story in the big book on page number 7. We're reading that third paragraph. It begins with, "But it was not." And it ends with the undertaker or the asylum. So our doom and gloom paragraph has been really awesome this morning. The shares have been great. I'll take another list of names after Marie shares. So Marie T., go right ahead.
Hey, Good morning. So I'm new to OA about 3 weeks. I'm just, you know, I did 47 years of yo-yoing. So this paragraph, obviously my voice is shaking, my whole body is shaking. And So this paragraph is, you know, what stuck out is, you know, Bill's story is alcoholic. Our story is eating. For 47 years, I tried my best to figure out why the heck do I have this real problem with food and yo-yoing. And part of me thought, you know, I've dealt with, like, my dad, who was an alcoholic, who caused me to have a very unsafe childhood, way too much violence and trauma. But I kind of, you know, denial is, you know, 100% denial. We're fine. Don't tell anyone. Nothing. It's all good. And I'll just kind of say about my dad and then move to the eating. You know, my mom, thank God, always told me, you know, he's sick. He doesn't know what he's doing when he's drinking. So that helped me to be compassionate to him. But, you know, I did Al-Anon. I did therapy for decades. And yet here I am, like, I read this little paragraph and it just is like, obviously I have more work to do with what was underneath my eating. Why did I eat? It's a sugar addiction for one. So I was like my dad with addiction, which that is brand new information for me. But, and I'll close with this. I read this and I have had, you know, with alcoholism, it's rampant with everyone around you, family, friends. And I guess what is just coming at me is especially this one person in my life who died of alcoholism. And I guess my mind's just going there. Why are some people open to the 12 steps and other people, it seems to be available to them? And then I don't understand that, but thank you.
Marie T. from Boston, thanks for sharing this morning and welcome home. We do value everybody's experience on the line, so we do ask that you limit your share to every third day in order that others might share their experience too. I'm now going to take another list of names. Please give me your first name, the first initial of your last name, and do so one at a time. Go right ahead.
Leah S.
Jackie M.
Leah S. Jackie.
Carmela G.
Carmela G.
Mary Ann M.
Mary Ann M. Gotcha.
Elise N.
Elise N. Anybody? One more? Two more? Well, let's go with this lineup. If you'll press star one to mute your phone. We're going to start off with Leah S., followed by Jackie M. Good morning, Leah.
Good morning, Jen A. Good morning, everyone. My name is Leah S. from Brooklyn, New York, and I'm so grateful to be here to be reviewing. Me, I was the pity pot. I never had a meal. I really never had a meal, and I always had my mouth going. My mouth was chewing and chewing and chewing, but I never had a meal. I never knew what a meal is, to sit down and to actually, this is what I'm going to eat. I just want to hop on to, because this is what I want to say, God either is or isn't. I lost my weight right away because I had to stick to my program and to my menus. And so I lost my program, I lost my weight, and you know, I used God the way I wanted to use God. I didn't understand that there's only one God, and God is in everything and everywhere and every part of my life. And right now, on Thursday, my son is getting married, and I'm going, I can't believe it. This Saturday was such a big party, and there was so much food and so much cake, and all I wanted was my meal at my time, and that was it? It's just quite unbelievable. Even after all these years, it's just unbelievable in reflection. And you know what? God is in everything, in every part of my life, in every one of them. Otherwise, I can't exist. I really can't function. And thank you for letting me share, and I pass.
Thank you so much, Leah S. from New York. Up next, we have Jackie M., followed by Carmela G.
Hi, this is Jackie M. from New Hampshire. Thanks for letting me share. As I was listening to this being read, I can't help but think of, you know, just where I am right now and really putting myself in that same position. You know, I'm 36 years old, and as you talked about, is the curve is just declining morally and bodily health. I mean, I'm 36 years old, and I already have non-alcoholic fatty liver disease. That's insane to me. You know, and despite all that, knowing that for more than a year, I still have struggled. I have, today will be my ninth day of abstinence, God willing, and me willing to do what I need to do to maintain that. And, you know, I think I've been in relapse for about 8 years in the program for 13, and there is nothing more lonely and despairing than knowing about program and still being really, really sick in the food. And, you know, jumping in, it's like a devastating blow to my pride. Like, I literally can't believe I'm here, you know? When I first came into OA, I was like, oh, I'll never be over X weight. And then I got abstinent, lost the weight that I needed to lose, and then I went back out, and then I gained more. And I said, I'll never be more than X amount. And it kept going like that. You know, every relapse, more weight came back on. And now I am at a point where it's unfathomable that I've gotten here. And I just so relate, like, just plunge into the dark. You know, I really had given up hope. I felt so entirely hopeless. And, you know, last, not this past Sunday, but the Sunday before, I just on a whim had like two humiliating experiences, and I got onto a meeting. I called the person to get the information to sign on, and that person is now my sponsor. It's God, you know. And anyway, so that's a little bit of hope in this very despairing paragraph, but I can so relate to this gut-wrenching, terrible feeling, the self-pity. I mean, I live in it, and my husband is in recovery for another illness, and, you know, he's just been watching it, and I've just been, you know, living this life without any concern of anybody else, because I can't see past myself and my own suffering in this illness, and I don't want to live like that. This is no way to live. It sucks. But anyway, so thank you for letting me share. Hopefully that made sense. Thank you.
Made all the sense in the world. Jackie M. from New Hampshire, welcome back and keep coming back. Carmela G., you're up next, followed by Mary Ann M. Good morning, Carmela.
Good morning, Jen. Thanks so much for moderating, and thank everyone who has been on the line this morning doing service and sharing and listening. Carmela G. gratefully recovered today from New York. And thank you, my higher power. My life, my bodily, moral health fell off like a ski jump. In disease, my life had the highs, the lows, a real Jekyll and Hyde. People didn't know who they were getting when I was in disease. Because some days I was full of joy, and some days I was full of rage. And it all depended on how I woke up. I woke up like that. Nothing had to happen on the outside. It was all coming from within. And it took, I always was a woman of faith, and I was recently asked that by a fellow in program, you always believed in a God? And I said, yes. But the reality was, I thought I was his equal. It took this program to make me realize that I was so powerless and that I was owned by a substance that held me for over six decades, and I was in denial, just like Bill. I could do it. My ego was just flaming. I could do it. All the others could fall, but not Carmella. But today I realize there is only one, and it's because I've unlocked the closet door and allowed my higher power to walk with me throughout the day instead of giving him the list of to-dos. And I have a true relationship. It took this program to teach me that. And for that, I am grateful every single day. And my health, cancer-free for 15 years, what a gift, what a gift. And all of that in gratitude to my higher power, who I love and who loves me. And as I tell all the young members of my family, I love you, but God loves you perfectly. And with that, I pass. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much, Carmella G. Up next, we have Mary Ann M., followed by Elise N. Go ahead, Mary Ann.
Good morning. Can I be heard?
Yes, ma'am. Go right ahead.
Okay. And it's Mary Ann N. as in Nancy from Michigan. The curve of my declining moral and bodily health fell off like a ski jump. And I don't think anybody I know in program, including myself, comes in here on a high note. And thank God, the consequences that I experienced, especially the incomprehensible demoralization, were gifts to me. I have a longtime friend in program who says, be grateful for the thing that's disturbing you. At the moment, it's disturbing you, because if I didn't have those things, I wouldn't have signals to myself to change. Pain has been my greatest motivator in life. And so now when I first of all have been taught to feel it, let it go, and accept it, and then look to see what is it telling me. I have this huge problem before I became absent with eating in the middle of the night. It was like a tidal wave that swept over me, that I would wake up and like be pulled by this unexplainable force to the refrigerator, and then I would wake up the next day with the remorse and the humiliation of having had, you know, the cycle of the binge. And now when I wake up with that feeling, I look to my higher power and I'm like, God, show me what this means. What's going on underneath this? And thank goodness I have the 10 step. I have a group that I can reach out to even in the middle of the night, because some of them are in England. Some of them are in, you know, in other time zones. And I can, you know, yes, it's a very uncomfortable feeling, no doubt. And that, I'm not minimizing that. But when I can just take a breath and look to see, you know, be grateful that it's showing me that something in my internal world is not right. There's some way that I need to surrender something to my higher power and change some fact of my life, then I can be grateful for it. And it takes the sting out of it. It helps me see underneath it, be shown under what's under. And with that, I pass.
Thank you so much, Mary Ann N., as in Nancy, from Michigan. And then up next, we'll have Elise N., and we still have more time on the clock, so I'll take a couple of names after Elise. Go ahead, Elise.
Hi. Good morning. Thank you, everybody, for your service. I just wanted to claim my seat, and I've been in this program probably over 30 years. I'm not sure exactly how long. And I came into a vision for you, and it's been, you know, more than a year. I'm not sure exactly how more than a year, much more than a year. And I just got on the scale today, and I finally went under 200 pounds, and I was about 274 when I started Envision for You. And I, you know, I went through a time where I had cellulitis. It's like blood issue that's exacerbated by weight, and I could have lost my leg. And I just wanted to express my gratitude for, you know, having the physical abstinence and having some emotional turmoil, but I'm working on that, trying to work on that through the steps and outside stuff, you know, other groups. And so I just wanted to claim my seat and say thank you. And everybody should have a great day. Bye.
Thanks, Elise. Don't press star one yet. Can you tell us what state you're calling from and how to spell your first name?
Elise, E-L-I-S-E, N. And on the list it says Passaic, New Jersey, but I'm now in Boca Raton. Thank you.
All right. Well, thank you so much for getting on and sharing this morning. Elise N. from New Jersey. Bill's story, we're on page 7, paragraph 3. We have time for a few more pitches. Who would like to give their first name, first initial of their last name?
Jan Levy, Arizona.
So I heard Jan somebody from Arizona. Try again.
Jan C. from Arizona.
C. Thank you, Jan.
C
and who
is
else
in
is
cat.
There?
Riska M.
Riska.
Anita J.
And Anita J.
Lisa
I miss
S.
anybody? And Lisa S. Okay, let's stop there. We'll hopefully we can get through everybody. If you guys all are brief and brilliant, we'll do it. All right, Jan C. from Arizona. Go right ahead.
Good morning, everybody. This is Jan C. from Casa Grande, Arizona. So grateful to be here. Thank you for all your service. Oh, my goodness, I'm nervous this morning. Don't share at this meeting. The curve of my declining moral and bodily health fell off like a ski jump, and after a time, I returned to the hospital. Well, that was me last summer. My husband was in hospice at home for 18 months. He has since passed away in January. I am so grateful to my higher power for this program because God got me through everything I needed to get through so I could get out of the food. I was beginning to eat the confectionaries I was serving him, and my mind was going nutso. I couldn't make decisions. It was so very difficult, and I knew I had to change. I've been in program for over 30 years, have had abstinence off and on. So I went to the hospital, and the hospital for me was making a commitment to finally go to a big book study meeting out of Scottsdale in the evenings. And I got a new sponsor, and I've worked the steps. It has literally saved my life. I have neutrality around food. From listening to everybody this morning, I know there's some things that I'm praying about, I'm going to put in my God box to see whether some of those things are also what God wants for me to do. But I am so grateful to be here. Folks, I was able to be abstinent all these months. Well, I started my new abstinence August 1st, and I was abstinent the day my husband died, and I've not been have to pick up any food now. If I can do it with God's help in this program, so can you. Thank you so much for letting me share.
Thank you, Jan C. from Casa Grande, Arizona. Rivka M., you're up, followed by Anita J. Go ahead, Rivka.
Yeah, hi. Thank you so much. This is Rivka M. from Baltimore, Maryland. Another Rivka from here. And I guess that frightful day that came again after that self-knowledge is something I just really related to. I got the self-knowledge personally from a doctor who was like, this is it. You lose weight or these are the other options, which were not good options. And so no problem. I was going to do it on my own. And that frightful day came when I realized I can't. I couldn't. I crashed. I hit my bottom, and it was a hard bottom for me. And the difference that I had was that I had, and this is, you know, a pitch for step 12, but I had been told about OA 2 years before this had happened. And it was because of that that I knew that there was somewhere I could go that I could do it with other people. And when I got here, I learned that I could do it with other people and with God. And that has been just, that saved my life. in so many ways, and saved my family from who I was. And yeah, that's really what I wanted to share. I'll keep it short for others to share. But thank you so much for this meeting. It's fantastic. And with that, I pass.
Thank you so much, Rivka M. from Baltimore. Up next, we're going to hear from Anita J. and Lisa S. Go ahead, Anita. Good morning.
Good morning to you, Jen. Thank you for your service. You're a good doobie. This is Anita J., and I'm recovered in Massachusetts. I just love this, but it was not. This is said after self-knowledge was the answer. For the frightful day came when I drank once more. Okay, this is like Groundhog Day. I get a new insight. This is it. This is it. And I'm going to now get it. And this went on since 1978, and it went on until 10 years ago. Over and over, this is it, no more, and the frightful day came when I picked up again. And once I picked up, there's no nibbling. I was not a nibbler. Once I picked up one thing, I was off and running. Even if I'd clean the house out, I could make concoctions out of absolutely nothing. It was amazing just to get that sweetness. Oh, my God, sweet. That is like it's a miracle what happened to me. And that's what I hope everybody sticks around long enough to understand that there's the answer. The answer is right here. I didn't hear it until I came here. I'm sure somebody must have told me. I read the big book before, but I never related. And now it's incredible how smart that book got since I first picked it up. So a blessed day to everybody. Thank you, and I pass.
Thank you so much, Anita J. from Boston, Massachusetts. Up next, we have Lisa S., who will finish us up for the day. Good morning, Lisa.
Excuse me. Hi, this is Lisa S. From Minnesota. I got married recently, so I don't actually know if I'm Lisa A. or Lisa S. in there. So one of those. From Minnesota. This is my first time sharing on this meeting. I've been listening to it. I've been in LA for 4 months, absent for 4 months. I came in a couple weeks before that. And listening to it the whole time, I had a sponsor who introduced me to it right away. But what hit me in that paragraph today, someone else was talking about like that moral and bodily health thing. And until I came into 12 steps, I don't think that I really understood what, like, moral health meant. In the doctor's opinion, he talked about, like, moral psychology and regular psychology. And my moral health, my moral psychology was just, like, blame everyone else for my problems. And my moral health falling off like a ski jump, like, the speed with which I started to blame other people for my problems was just so fast. When I was disconnected from God. I mean, I didn't believe in God, so I didn't even know I was disconnected from God, but that's what it was. And then to understand that, like, moral health, that piece of it is, like, was going back, like, in the fourth step, it just, like, blew my mind that, like, I've been to therapy a million times, right? And it's, like, my mom did this, my dad did that. And, like, therapy gets you as far, regular psychology, not moral psychology, right, got me as far as, like, okay, yeah, like, my dad was, you know, volatile, so I eat. And, like, no, moral psychology is, like, I'm my problem is that I have wrath toward my dad, and that's disconnecting me from God. And, like, not just I need to forgive my dad, but I need forgiveness, like, for that wrath toward him. And just, like, that blew my mind and, like, completely changed my life because I just didn't even see, like, how – like, my piece of all of these things and how they were disconnecting me from God. And it was just, I just never had heard it in that specific paragraph before, just like watching my moral house follow like a ski jump, but then so quickly it like, I don't know, like it just, God opening my eyes to what moral health is and being able to just like go to him for that forgiveness, forgive all those people, how quickly that could change. So thanks for letting me share. It's fun to share for the first time. I'm going to listen for a while now and I'll pass.
Thank you so much, Lisa S. from Minnesota, maybe Lisa A. Congratulations on getting married and being abstinent and sharing for the first time today. What a great way to end our meeting. Thank you to all the newcomers who came. Thank you to everybody who shared, Team Tuesday and all the listeners. I got God bumps from head to toe, people. Please join us for a second unrecorded hour of study immediately following the closing. The share ID for today, grab your pen and paper if you want to share this meeting with a friend or listen to it again, is Tuesday, March 5th, 2024, 7 a.m. Eastern Standard recording is 21,193. That's 21193. So we're now going to close with a reading from the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous. We're going to be on page 164, and we're going to follow it up with the Serenity Prayer. Lynn S., please go right ahead.
Good morning, Lynn S., recovered compulsive overeater in Toronto, Canada. Our book is meant to be suggestive only. We realize we know only a little. God will constantly disclose more to you and to us. Ask him in your morning meditation what you can do each day for the man who is still sick. The answers will come if your own house is in order, but obviously you cannot transmit something you haven't got. See to it that your relationship with him is right, and great events will come to pass for you and countless others. This is the great fact for us. Abandon yourself to God as you understand God. Admit your faults to him and to your fellows. Clear away the wreckage of your past. Give freely of what you find and join us. We shall be with you in the fellowship of the Spirit, and you will surely meet some of us as you trudge the road of happy destiny. May God bless you and keep you until then.
We'll wait till the recording stops. Give it just a second.